Thankful for the times that we have had to have some services via conference call and the other. We've had some real learning curves and how that could all come together, but I'm thankful for the opportunity we have had for that. I'm real happy this morning that we can actually meet together in the chapel. Just like to begin by saying Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers. If you still have your mother and you're an adult, take an extra moment to say Happy Mother's Day and bless them today. It's Mother's Day type theme to our little message this morning. And I have a real concern in our world and our society today about several things. I have a real burden for men that they would be men and be the fathers that they ought to be in their homes and in their families. And I have a real concern and a real burden that the mothers would be real mothers. That our young ladies would grow up to know how to be a mother and be not only know how, but be willing and capable of being a mother. Not just biologically, but the role of a mother. I'm thinking of the people that have taken in and nurtured a non-domesticated animal because they found a little one that had been orphaned. Years ago, when we first moved to where we live now, we had a pair of owls that had laid eggs. You know, the mother owl laid eggs, and I don't know who sat on them and hatched them. I don't know how that works. I just know that they hatched out several little owls in the barn that was on our place. And in the night, I was pretty impressed with how silently the owl would fly through the air, and we would see them fly out because they're more of a nocturnal animal and would go hunting and all of that. And in the process of them raising some little owls, owlets, or whatever you call a baby owl, for whatever reason, there were some of them that got kicked out of the nest, and we found them on the floor of the barn, and by the time we found them, their life had already expired. But it would have been real tempting for us, I know, for our family, if we'd have found a little baby owl that was still alive, to try to feed that little thing and to watch it grow up. And it would have been fascinating to raise a baby owl. I don't think I could have kept my boys or my wife from saying, oh, we've just got to do it. Now, I'll just tell you that this is a sidebar, but baby owls are really ugly. They're mostly eyes and feet. Okay? But when we found them, they were already gone. There was no hopes but I know people that have taken little bunnies in the house and raised them. I know people that have taken like a little deer or raccoons. Sometimes maybe people have taken something a little bit more of a predator type. I knew a man one time that had rescued a hawk, and he nurtured that hawk and raised it up, and he spent a lot of time with that, trying to train that hawk to go and come back and light on his arm. It was that's a marginally successful enterprise for man to command a hawk, or they call it something like falconing or something like that. I didn't do my research on that this morning, but I'm sure there's been people that have found a little bear. You know, a little bear that just, our children like little stuffed animals, little stuffed teddy bears, and just so cute looking. But you know, if you're successful in nurturing a baby bear, it grows into a big bear, right? And if you're successful in raising, we caught one time a baby coyote, a little one. And I don't know if my boys were tempted with it or not, but I wouldn't let them raise a baby coyote, because I know what a baby coyote turns into. It turns into a full-grown coyote. And I didn't want a full-grown coyote not afraid of me. All right? So here's the point I'm bringing all of this up. Every time someone raises something from a cute little baby, or something that you're having compassion on, and you raise it up, and then it gets to be an adult, and you decide, well, you need to go do what an adult deer does, or an adult raccoon does, or an adult bear, and no, you can't come in the house anymore, and you can't, we're not going to wrestle anymore. You know, when that bear gets to be bigger than I am, and their teeth and their claws are sharp, I'm not interested in roughhousing with a bear anymore. All right? But he, in his mind, he has been, his thinking has been altered to the point that he still thinks he's part of my family. And it messes him up. Okay? So, unfortunately, I said all of that to say this. Unfortunately, in our society today, there's been a lot of things that has come into play over the last few generations that has caused mothers to not really know how to be a mother anymore. There's a lot of things that's available that are available today that weren't there for my mother or my grandmother. If you were expecting a child, you knew there was major responsibility that was coming with that. And today, it's not quite that way. There's somebody, there's something out there to take some of the pressure off of you. So, I just want to applaud our mothers today, and young and old, for those who are stepping up to the plate and being a mother. I want to tell you that that's a very, very honorable and needful and admirable office to fill. It is something that we need desperately, is for mothers to be mothers. I'd like for us to turn to the 23rd chapter of Luke. I've been reading this week, and maybe a little longer than this week, been thinking about the period of time between Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection and when he departed from this world. And maybe more on that this evening, but I would like for us to begin reading some of that account in Luke chapter 23, and we'll begin at verse 44. And I want to talk to us about some mothers today. In the role that they filled. In Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 44, I'm going to have to read several verses to get down to the point that I really want us to dwell on, so bear with us. It says, "And it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, Into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, certainly this was a righteous man. And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts and returned. Notice that. All the people that came and witnessed Jesus dying on the cross, they smote their breasts. Oh, I wished it hadn't had to happen. And it says they returned. They went back where they come from. And all his acquaintance and the women that followed him from Galilee stood afar off, beholding these things. And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and he was a good man and a just. The same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them. He was of Arimathea, a city of the Jews. He also himself waited for the kingdom of God. This man went unto Pilate and begged the body of Jesus, and he took it down and wrapped it in linen and laid it in a sepulcher that was hewn in stone, wherein never man before was laid. And that day was a preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. And the women also, which came with him from Galilee, this is the second time that they are being referred to, followed after and beheld the sepulcher and how his body was laid. So they were kind of in the background. They followed. They did not leave. Okay, the others, it said, in verse 48, it said, the others that beheld or looked on and witnessed Jesus dying on the cross, when they seen that he was dead, they departed. They went back to wherever they come from. And all the other acquaintance and the women that followed him from Galilee, those that were more closely attached to Jesus, they were looking on here, and they followed the process of Joseph going and asking for permission to bury the body of Jesus. So they went and looked, they knew exactly where Jesus was buried or laid in the tomb. They knew exactly how he was laid in the tomb. They just observed all of this. In verse 56, and they returned and prepared spices and ointments and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment. Now, when he passed away, when he died on the cross, it appears to have been somewhere around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay? And from 3 o'clock to dark, somehow Joseph of Arimathea received permission to bury the body. The body was taken down. It was put in the tomb. Some initial preparation for burial was made. Whether he was wrapped in some type of burial cloth of some sort, and covered his face, that I believe we know that it was, he covered it with a napkin or some kind of piece of cloth. And so the women observed all of this, and it says they returned, they went back to their place of abode or their residence or where they were staying if they had come from Galilee, and they prepared spices and anointments and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment. So they did not violate the Sabbath, but they made a lot of preparation. Now this was a very eventful day, and I don't know exactly, because the Sabbath was supposed to start at dark, or sundown, maybe sundown was before dark. I don't know how they got it all done. I just want to bring this to our attention. I don't know how mothers in the past got it all done. I just don't. I look back at a real brief overview of my mother and her mother and others, and I find out all of the things that they had accomplished besides keeping my brother and I out of mischief while my dad was at work. I don't ever remember wondering if I had clean clothes to wear. Always had clean clothes to put on. I always had food to eat. I never remember coming in and saying, "Mama, I'm hungry." And she said, "Well, just go see what you can find in the refrigerator." I never got that response from my mother. She made cookies. We were always trading our cookies with the neighbor boy that had Twinkies, you know. We thought that was a novel thing because all we were stuck with was homemade cookies. And he wishes he could trade with us and we wished we could trade with him. But my mother always had a cookie jar that had cookies in it or something. If we wanted one in the middle of the afternoon, we could just go get one. I don't know when she fit that all in, because I don't remember helping her make cookies. I mean, it was a rare time when we helped her make something in the kitchen. And she was always concerned. She knew, I don't know how she figured it out, but she knew when we were doing something that we really shouldn't have been doing. Somehow, she had this presence of mind to be able to know when we were fixing to do something that she wouldn't approve of. She kept our house very tidy. We didn't have a very elaborate house by any means, but she kept the house very tidy. And I thought we were going to wear the furniture out, moving it around so she could vacuum underneath it. She just was that type of person. And she was, and always, there were always home canned food in the we called it the root cellar or whatever. There was always something we could go back on. There was always plenty of provisions, and a lot of it was because of the industry of her hand. I don't know how she got it all done. I don't know how these women got it, made it all happen. But somewhere between 3 o'clock in the afternoon and the beginning of the Sabbath, whether that was actually dark or the sun setting, they had things prepared. And they rested on the Sabbath. Now I want to start reading in verse 1 of chapter 24. It says, "Now upon the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came unto the sepulchre, bringing the spices which they had prepared and certain others with them. And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre, and they entered in and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And it came to pass, as they were much perplexed thereabout, behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. And as they were afraid and bowed down their faces to the earth, they said unto him, Why seek ye the living among the dead? He is not here, but he is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remembered his words, and returned from the sepulchre, and told all these things unto the 11 and to all the rest. And now he tells us who was there. He says, It was Mary Magdalene, and Joanna, and Mary the mother of James, and other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles." So we find there was at least two Marys and Joanna, and there were other women. I don't know how many were mothers, but I just want to touch base here with who the women were. There were more, I think maybe there were more than two Marys. I'm not sure. If Matthew, the 28th chapter in the first verse says, "In the end of the Sabbath, it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to see the sepulchre." And in Mark, the 16th chapter in the first verse, it says, "And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had brought sweet spices, they came that they might come and anoint him. In John, the first 20th chapter in the first verse, it says, "The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulchre, and seeth the stone taken away from the sepulchre." So, all of these instances, it was only the women. It was only those that were, some of them were mothers. I don't know if they were all mothers, but they had the characteristics of a mother. They were mature women, that they had a real interest in the welfare of Jesus. Okay? And I want us to notice here in Luke, it says, "Now the first, upon the first day of the week, very early in the morning," very early in the morning. In Matthew, it said, "As it began to dawn." How many of us here, you don't have to raise your hands, but how many of us here have been up before the sun and have saw or witnessed it beginning to dawn? Ever witnessed that? And in John it said, "The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark." So when it's dark, and you know that morning is coming, but only because the clock says so, not because you see any light, and you know morning is coming, and there is something about one moment you realize it's so dark that I can't see the outline of maybe the tree or the fence post or whatever it is. It's just really, really dark, especially if it's overcast. And then maybe just a few moments later you realize, oh, I can make out. There, I can see the outline of something, whatever it is. And then this is as it begins to dawn. And the point I'm wanting to make here is somehow they prepared all of their spices and ointments between the time that he passed. I believe they stayed around to see exactly where he was buried. And somehow they got it done between then and the time that the Sabbath started, because it says they rested on the Sabbath. And here they are at the tomb before it was dawning. I believe there's plenty of evidence that they didn't show up mid-morning. All right? The sun wasn't well up in the sky. It was dark when they got there. They were ready to be, you know, the Sabbath, they weren't supposed to be near a dead person. But the Sabbath was being passed, and they were at the dawning of the first day of the week. When it just began to start to get light, they were there. Now, I'm going to tell you, it takes some real desire for most people to get up before daylight. There needs to be a good reason. Now, I like to get up and get going in the morning, but just to say I like to get up to see the sun come up every morning, there needs to be a good reason. All right? Ever wondered where the disciples were at this specific time? Or what their frame of mind was concerning embalming Jesus' body? Ever thought about that? None of those that came to do this were the disciples. There were those that had the characteristics of a mother. Did you know that a mother's love will trump everything but the love of God? Do you know that? I think that men, disciples, the disciples here specifically, can typically reach a point of rational fatigue pretty easily. And that means it just don't make sense anymore. And I believe that's where the disciples were. It just didn't make sense. They had put their hearts, they'd put their lives, they'd abandoned their livelihood, many of them, in following Jesus. And they were there, I believe they were some of those that when they saw him expire on the cross, they returned. They left. I don't know for sure, but I wonder, did the disciples know exactly where Jesus was buried like these women did, like the mother did? I believe they maybe were licking their wounds, so to speak. They were thinking about, it's all over now. It was good while it lasted. They were emotionally fatigued and wore out. Did you know that the opportunity to be emotionally fatigued is there for everybody? But did you know, I believe that there is something special about a mother. When they are emotionally fatigued, and yet this is their child. This is their family. I can't let this happen. You know, I believe the disciples, and I probably would have been one like this. What good is it going to do to put more spices and anointments on Jesus' body? He's gone. Would have been my attitude, but not the mother's. This was Jesus. I can't let his body, although he's gone, I can't let his body just rot away without having a proper burial. I just can't do that. Because there's something about this mother element. All right? So they went prepared early while it was yet dark to do what they felt like they had to do. And the disciples didn't even believe them when they come back. I don't know if they woke them up or what, but they were not in tune with what they felt was necessary. My mother made me do a lot of things that I didn't think was necessary. She had parameters that I had to for me, and she wouldn't let me go to bed dirty. She wouldn't let me forget to brush my teeth. There was a lot of things that it didn't matter whether I was sleepy or not. You got to do this before you go to bed. You got to do this before you go to... You got to comb your hair. Why does a boy have to comb their hair? I'll tell you why. Because your mother told you had to. All right? It's not because you really see any need in it. It's because mama said so. There is something about a mother that instills a lot of values. A real mother is what I'm talking about. You know, when men become rationally fatigued, I don't get it. It don't make any sense. I'm not going to waste my effort on it. That's when a mother will go beyond that. I'm talking about mothers that have not been taken out of their environment. You know, just like the wild animals that have been raised out of their environment, and you say, okay, now you go play with your other people, other animals that look like you. You know, if you raised a raccoon on peanut butter and celery and playing with the children, and then you take him off to the edge of woods and drop him off, you know what he's going to do? He's going to follow you. He's not going to go out and find somebody that looks like him. He's going to go back to your house if he can at all. And if he can't go home with you, he's going to try to get in the car with somebody else. That's just the way it's going to be. And if we take a mother, a young lady, and we constantly try to take this away from them, they're not going to know how to be a mother. And that's why we ask these questions. Why do these people not know how, why do these young ladies or whatever age they are, why do they not know how to be a mother? It's because they have been indoctrinated by our society that that's not the thing to do anymore. They've been pushed into something that's totally out of what God designed for us to be. I'm going to tell you, this was very much, I believe, God's plan for these women at this time. All right? So, I'm thankful for the efforts that my mother put into me. She told me once a story about when I was a newborn baby. She had to tell me because it was before my memory kicked in. She told me that she had, she realized shortly after, maybe within a week or so after I was born, she would put me in a little bed, a bassinet or whatever she called it, right by her bed. And she said she noticed that she had a really sore elbow. It was just on one side, and she couldn't figure out why her elbow was so sore until she realized that she was getting up on one elbow in the bed to look and see if I was all right. And she'd done that so many times in the night that she had a sore elbow. Her skin was getting raw on her elbow from looking over and to see if I was okay. Now, she had extra reasons because I was didn't get here in very good shape. I was kind of beat up, but anyway, she was worried about me, and all night long she would be up on her elbow looking to make sure I was breathing. Didn't have any chance to succumb to SIDS or any of that kind of stuff. Mama would have been there. I'm telling you, she would have been there. She comforted me more than once when I was a little guy growing up by telling me that if she could be sick instead of me, she would gladly do it. I don't ever remember my daddy telling me that. You know, I believe my daddy told me, but and I believe my daddy prayed for me and all of that, but that was out of limits, you see. But my mother cared for me so much, she would say, you know, if I could be sick so you could be well, I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd be glad to be sick for you. And that made me feel better just because she wanted to be sick instead of me. You know, that's something about a mother. I'm not telling you that's what you have to do if you're a mother, okay? I'm just telling you that's what she did. She went beyond what others would do. Then nobody else offered to be sick for me. Looking back, I want to preface this by saying I didn't become a wild, rebellious young man as a teenager, all right? But I know that I hurt her feelings. And I know one time in particular, I thought I was doing the right thing. And I know that I hurt her feelings. I wrote her a letter one time and told her that she wasn't number one in my life anymore. And if there's one thing that I could go back and do different, I would do something different there. But my feelings were very strong at that time. But I wouldn't write that kind of letter to my mother if I had it to do over again. But you know, she never quit loving me. I don't know what my dad would have done if I sent that to him. He might have been he might have reached the point of, oh, fine, I won't talk to you either. I don't know. But Mama never backed up. She never let on like I'd hurt her. Like I'd hurt her feelings at all. She never brought that letter up to me that I remember. She said, I wish you hadn't said those things. I want to say this morning, I want to say thank you, mothers, for the love and the devotion that you've demonstrated to your children and your families. For the times that you prepared for your loved ones when you were disappointed. For the energy and the effort that you've expended for their well-being. When I think about the mothers caring about how Jesus was buried, and the disciples just knew that Jesus wasn't there. And these mothers' spirits, these mother characters, were concerned that Jesus wasn't really buried properly. And they were going to fix it. And they put out the effort to make it happen. I want to say thank you for the times that you've been willing to take the brunt of the pain and the disappointment. For going beyond what makes sense. You know, I've been at those places where I've said to my wife, it don't make any sense to me. I wouldn't waste my time. But there's something about a mother that'll go beyond that. A real mother. So I want to end our little thought with a verse in Galatians, the 4th chapter. Notice in Galatians 4 and well, my Bible's getting a little bit deteriorated here. 4:26. It says, but Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. Without going into a lot of details, I just want you to know that I believe that the spiritual church of God is the mother of all saved souls. I believe that we have truth, and I believe that we ought to demonstrate to the world around us a visible body of Christ. A visible mother from above. A visible spiritual Israel in our world today that's hurting so much. There's a lot of hurting individuals around us that need a mother that'll go beyond. You know, there's going to come a day when the God of all creation, our Father, which art in heaven, is going to come to the place that I believe he's rationally fatigued. This is it. We're not going any further. And the mother's job between now and then is to help every soul that we possibly can. May the Lord help us to not allow the impact of sinful mankind and characteristics to impact us to the point that we're totally out of our element and we don't know how to function, like the little pet squirrel that you had as a child that liked to climb the curtains and jump from one piece of furniture to the next, or the little pet deer that you had that you fed things to off of the table and let them in your house. And maybe the other thing, if we would have found one alive, I'm sure that we would have had a story about a pet owl that we tried to raise. But all of those kind of things are taking something out of their element. And Lord, help us as the church to not allow the events and circumstances of the world around us to push us out of the element that we ought to be functioning in. There's people out here that need to know that God cares about them and that there is a way that they can love one another, that they can find acceptance and approval. There's someone that'll tell them they need to brush their teeth. You don't need to act like that. We're just not going to let you go to bed dirty. We need to be able to be the mother. And Lord, help us to know how to reach those around us. I want to be able to do it. I'm not very equipped to have the mother mindset because I'm a man. But I got a picture in my mind today of the mother mindset and the mother's heart. These women and the effort that they made to try to make sure that the burial for Jesus was done properly. Yes, he was gone, but a mother won't let it just disappear. I got to make sure it's done right, you see. I got to make sure that they're not uncomfortable. Lord, help us to have a real spiritual mother's heart and characteristic about the way we operate. You pray for me.